There is a difference between purpose and plan. We often confuse them. Hi, Randy Cantrell. You can tell I'm not in the yellow studio. Out and about, compelled to hit record because this has been something that's been on my mind for a few months. And of course, as I'm out and about, I carry the digital recorder and a microphone with me. It's just kind of what I do. Quirky like that, you know. But welcome to this special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Purpose and plan, these have been on my mind for months now. And I'll just, true confession, they've been on my mind because I've been wrestling with this. And I think these are tougher things to answer when you're a solopreneur than, for me, they are. And maybe that's a harsh generalization, but I'm going to make it anyway. For me, much, much harder to wrestle with purpose because it's just me. In years of leading organizations, pretty easy to come up with a purpose and kind of market that purpose, sell the story to the organization. I learned as a young man, you can't get an organization ramped up for a plan unless first they understand the purpose. I've worked for some really wealthy guys, and all they cared about was saying, send me my check. You know, I want to make this much money this year. My job as a hired gun running other people's businesses, especially early on in my career, I realized that was important for me to know. And I was wired in such a way that it worked for me. It gave me some clarity, I suppose. And as a hired gun, it was like, okay, I know what they expect. And so I appreciated that. But I don't think any one of them ever expected me to go then to the organization and say, okay, guys, the owner wants a vacation home in Vail. So this year, here's the number. And the purpose is we got to get him this vacation home in Vail. I mean, nobody's going to sign up for that. Nobody's going to go knock down a wall or walk on coals of fire for that. So I had to not deceive and not manipulate. I had to instill in the organization a much bigger sense of purpose. And that was my job. I felt like that was my job. And I'm pretty certain that the guys that hired me felt like that was my job. You know, it was my job to make the owner's dream come true because my ultimate customer, when I was running somebody else's business, my ultimate customer was them. My job was to make their dream come true because that was the only way I was going to make my own dreams come true. But that's a very different thing when you're standing in front of a group of employees now and you're talking about a plan. And let's say the plan is some percentage of increase over last year. Two questions have always kind of dominated my life. One is why, and the other is why not. 10% increase over last year. Okay, why? And why not 9? Why not 12? Why not 15? Why not 20? Why 10? Those are the kind of questions that I wrangle with on a really regular basis and always have. And it's one of the qualities that I think made me a good leader, made me a good manager, because I would wrestle with those kinds of things. Those don't address purpose. I've long argued, and business owners have frequently not believed it, but it really is truly this drop-dead simple, especially when it comes to customer service. It really is nothing more than a commitment to do it. Southwest Airlines here in Dallas, Texas, made a commitment to be the low-cost, no-frills airline, and to do it better than anybody else. That's who they are. That's their purpose. It answers a ton of questions. Why don't they have meals? It violates the purpose. Now, they're just now coming out with an initiative where you can pay a premium if you want to be boarded early. If you want to be able to go on, or if you want to be able to pick your seat, they are now playing with letting you pay a premium to do that, as opposed to what everybody's commonly in this part of the country especially called, you know, the cattle call kind of a thing. You go, you get your little boarding pass, and based on when you arrive at the gate, and you go and you sit anywhere you want to sit. And it's how they've operated for a long, long time. But why did they operate that way? Why do it that way? Why not have assigned seating from day one? Because it's more cost effective to do it the way they've been doing it. We can sell, pick a number, 100 seats on a plane. You guys figure it out. You guys sit where you want to. If a seat's taken, then it's taken. We don't have to worry about seat assignments and computers and printing stuff. We just got to print a ticket, give you this plastic boarding pass, which is what they used to be, and get on the plane. Get on the plane and go. Why? Well, because our purpose is to be the low-cost, no-frills airline. Our purpose is to be get you there on time, get you there as cheaply as possible. And no, we're not gonna give you a bunch of frills. And there's not going to be a movie. There's not going to be a meal. It is what it is. Oh, and by the way, we're also going to add this dimension to the whole thing. We're going to make it fun. Well, why? Because fun doesn't cost anything. And when there's no expense, why not have fun? It doesn't cost any more to smile and laugh than it does to moan and groan and complain. Well, yeah, I could argue it does, but you get the point. When it comes to a dollar, we can tell our people, we can show our people we're going to have fun. There's no investment there, but there's huge payoffs. And so that's what they are, and that's who they are. They have been successful because they've remained true to that purpose. There are other companies out there. I mean, I'm thinking of a number of luxury automotive people, automobile manufacturers, and they are what they are. I mean, a Rolls Royce, a Lamborghini, an Aston Martin, they are who they are, and they are successful at being who they are because they're not confused. You know, it's about fine quality, refined fit and finish, world-class components, design, engineering, handcrafted interiors, and they're staying true to that. Now, any one of those companies certainly have got the wherewithal to produce a low-cost, cool car. It's not who they are. It's not their purpose. Their purpose is to produce world-class. Well, can you produce a world-class cheap? No, it goes against their purpose. And yet so many businesses, I find, and especially toward last year as people were planning this new year, 2013, a lot of talk about plans. Planning to do this, planning to do that, planning this level of revenue, planning that degree of profit, planning to open this new thing, planning this new initiative, that new initiative, this new division, planning to hire this many people. I rarely ever heard anybody talk about their purpose. I rarely heard somebody talk about how we're going to implement this plan because this is kind of a void in this one little area of our purpose. And we really feel like we need to attack that. It just, I didn't hear that. And frankly, I would have been blown away if I had. And so I began to be obsessed with this, admittedly, over about the last 6 months, and more so because I was wrestling with it. And frankly, it's something that I have been wrestling with since the spring of 2009 when I walked away from, you know, being who I was and trying to go through this metamorphosis to reinvent myself. And I think it's more of a reinvention than it is a discovery necessarily. I think it's more of a reinvention than it is some kind of awakening. It's just when you get to be, well, I'm in good company. Today, as I'm hitting the record button, it's February the 20th, 2013. It's Sir Charles Barkley's 50th. Well, Sunday was Michael Jordan's 50th. Okay, I'm a few years ahead of them, but there's something about getting to your fifth decade that you're comfortable in your skin. You've still got, Lord willing, you've still got a number of years ahead of you. You still hopefully have health and well-being, and you're still mentally agile, and you're not ready to call it a day. You know, you're too young for that, but you're not a kid anymore. If you're like me, you've got grown kids and you got grandkids and you're pretty solidified and you're pretty cemented. It probably isn't this, where am I going to live? You know, what's my career going to look like? And now for me, it's what's my career going to look like in the sense of, okay, now what? Now what do I want to do? And while a lot of people may wrestle with purpose in a bigger sense, in a more philosophical sense, I don't wrestle with that part of it at all. Now, here's a religious warning, so I'm just going to be candid and tell you straight up, and I'm not making any apologies for this, so I'm warning you in advance. Religious discussion ahead. I won't belabor this and I won't be very long about it. But one of the roles that I serve, which is hugely important, frankly, it's the most important work without question. It's the most important work. And it's a work that I began a little more than a decade ago. I was blessed to be fortunate to be selected by a small congregation in Fort Worth, Texas, to be one of three elders. And I'm now one of two because we lost one. Age and ill health took him from us a couple of years ago, and now there are two of us. And it is our work. It's not our profession in the sense that it's not a business arrangement. It's not a money-making endeavor. It's a spiritual endeavor, but it is the work. It is absolutely the vocation, and it trumps everything. So I don't sit here and worry about purpose and what's my purpose. That is one big part of the grand scheme of things for me. But now let's pull back and talk business. Especially those of us that are solopreneurs. It's us. And whatever purpose we have, well, we decide. And that can be crazy tough. I found it, frankly, much easier if I knew that the owner of the company, he wanted a summer home or a winter home in Vail, Colorado, and okay, I know what I have to do. And here's how much money he's expecting to make this year. Okay, now I've got to make that dream come true. He's my number one customer. So this is exactly how it would roll. I hopefully would find that out sooner than later, and I would press to know what are the expectations for next year. You know, let's make your dreams come true, because that was my job. My job, by and large, was to make the people that I worked for to make their dreams come true. Secondarily, my job was to try to make the dreams of the employees as much as was possible to try to make those dreams come true. It's the only way that you can have an organization that moves forward. The third group that was obviously critical were the customers. What do the customers expect? So I always had three groups of people that were at the forefront of my mind that I had to necessarily put in front of my own interest, because my interest was only going to be served if I could serve the guy that owned the business, the employees that helped run the business, and the customers who supported the business. If I could make those three people happy, and of course, I had to make the first guy happy. That trumps everything. Well, the only way I knew to make him happy is I had to have employees who were on board. Because if you don't have employees on board doing the work, I can assure you, the owner ain't going to be happy. If the owner's you or if the owner is somebody else. And the only way that I could really make that third group happy, the customers happy, is I had to have the employees on board. So for me, the middlemen, quite literally and figuratively, the employees were at the crux of it all. Now, there are organizations that understand this. I wasn't the first to recognize this. Employees have got to come before customers, and it admittedly is this chicken and egg kind of a thing, because the employees are the ones serving the customers. Southwest Airlines cannot be who they are if the employees hate their work. If the employees hate their jobs, and they don't, and you can get on a Southwest flight and you can figure that out in seconds, and it makes a difference in the customer experience. So I had to make these three groups of people happy, but the purpose of the owner has to be something different than the employees. The employees aren't going to rally around, let's get the boss a Vail home. You can't make that appeal to the customers either. You need to come and support our business. Come and buy our product. Come and buy our service, because our owner needs a home in Vail. You can try that. I've never been brassy enough to try it, because I just figured it not going to work. So we have an owner who has a purpose in mind that is admittedly financial. We have employees, and depending on how many employees you've got, you could have that many purposes. You might have employees, they're working strictly to put food on the table. Others might be working because they've got kids approaching college and they want to buy college for their kids. The purposes are all over the place, because it's just how we are as people. Everybody's motive is different. Purposes are different. Customers, well, hopefully you've got more customers than you do employees, and so now you've got that many more. So you've got to tie it all together, and you got to figure out, you know, there's got to be some central, compelling, engaging kind of a thing that we can really get behind. And what I found to be the most efficient and effective and honest and truthful and authentic way was to just simply let people know there's all kinds of dreams here. And it may not be my business what your dream is. That may be a dream that only you and your family have. It may not be any of my business. And if you want to share it, that's great and wonderful, but you may not want to share it. But our objective is to be as successful as we can be so we can fulfill our own dreams. But now, as an organization, why are we here? Why are we getting up in the morning and coming and doing whatever this is that we do? And now we've got to make that purpose also appeal to those people out there in the market that we want their business. Why should they give us their business? Well, because our owner wants a home in Vail, and we want to put our kids through college. And you know what it comes back to? It really all does come back to a very self-centered kind of a thing, but I'm going to argue it really isn't that self-serving. What's in it for me? What's in it for me? And we all want that. That really is. I get really tired of hearing people, I'm driven to serve people. Okay, I get that if the people you're driven to serve are yourself and your family, people that you love, people that you care about, okay. You're driven to serve complete strangers? Are you really? Now, I don't mean to sound jaded and cynical, although sometimes I am. No, okay, quite often I am. But I'm not that crazy. I happen to know for a fact that you're going to do what you think is, well, it may not be in your best interest, but it's what you want. I mean, how else are you going to explain the drug addict? It's not in their best interest to be addicted to any substance, but it's what they want to do. And in many cases, it's a compelling what they want to do. Oh, yeah, okay, I could get in trouble with all the mental health professionals. You know, it's a disease. Yeah, it's called, you know, complete utter selfishness. This is what it is. It's called lack of self-discipline. It's called idiocy, stupidity. Oh, yes, I firmly believe addiction, you know, it can morph into this, you know, mental illness, and people can't get it on track. But at some point, they made a choice and they went down the wrong path. And people destroy their lives because of it. So we don't always seek what's best for us. We don't always serve ourselves well, but we are serving ourselves. So whether we're doing it for good, whether we're doing it for evil, we're self-serving. Now, I'm not saying that this is all bad. It's perfectly honorable for a mother, a father, a husband, a wife. We work to provide for ourselves and our family. Honorable. They're our responsibility. There's something about being accountable. There's something about being responsible. There's something about being honorable. I mean, these are absolutely worthwhile virtues, and I applaud people who pursue those for those reasons. But there has to be something bigger. There has to be something bigger in the sense that, yes, we want to get up in the morning and we want to do the right thing and we want to take care of our own. And yes, there may be some causes and other things that we want to do, other people we want to help. And I'm not castigating the whole notion of helping strangers. Yes, I hope that there are many of us who want to do that. But I'm not going to lie to you and tell you I'm going to get up tomorrow morning compelled to go help strangers. I'm not that altruistic. I want to get up tomorrow and help support my wife. I want to get up tomorrow and help put myself in a position to help my kids and my grandkids and the church. And, you know, I got some things that are important to me. Some things that are close to me, some things that fit in where I believe I'm feeling a sense of purpose. And that's going to be very different than your sense of purpose. So when you're talking about this organization, you're talking about an owner, you're talking about employees, you're talking about customers, and then I'm fourth, and okay, I've got to construct something that is engaging enough for us all so that we can hit the target, so that we can implement a plan, but the plan's got to be driven by the purpose. There was a year, in the year 2000, I came up with this, you know, I had this grand brainstorm, quantum leap. I had been languishing for about a year listening to other businesses talk about, you know, this percentage increase and that percentage increase. And I'd been on this crusade for a few years, probably between 97 and 99, particularly, had been kind of arguing with some, you just, that's a hard pitch. Come on. It's hard to get up in front of a group of employees and rally everybody around a 3% increase. I just was never able to do that. Maybe there are some people out there that are so charismatic they can do that, but I wasn't. And so about the second half of 1999, I came up for the year 2000, and of course, it was the whole Y2K scare and all that. And I thought, you know, let's just go big. Yes, really go big. we want a quantum leap. And there were some other things that I was implementing in the business at the time, some pretty dramatic changes and a little different direction in the business. And so it was very fitting at the time. And I remember meeting with my staff, and I had these big notebooks I had built that had, you know, all the plans laid out. I mean, I had gone to great lengths. I had detailed, here's what we're going to do, and here's why we're going to do it. And I had done just what I'd done as a father. You know, I raised my kids, even though they may not have been as preoccupied as I was as a kid. I want to know why. Well, when I made decisions as a father, I wanted my kids to understand why. No, we're not going to let you do this or that, and here's why. Okay, yes, we're going to let you do this, and here's why. It was just always important to me, and it still is. So I remember gathering the staff around and having many conversations, many weekly meetings about this whole quantum leap thing, and telling them, here's what we're going to do, and here's why we're going to do it. Here's why it's important. And here's the benefit to you. Here's why this is going to be important to you, Mr. Warehouse Manager, and here's why this is going to be important to you, Mr. Store Manager, and here's why this is going to be important to you, you know, Mr. Finance Guy. And everybody had to see where they fit. It's like this puzzle, and if I can't see where I fit in the puzzle, then I'm basically going to work under the assumption I don't fit. And if I don't fit, how comfortable am I? And if I don't fit, how much good am I going to be? And if I don't fit, how effective am I going to be? And if I don't fit, how much of my best are you going to see? You're not, because I don't see where I fit. And when I don't see where I fit, if I've got any ambition at all, and if I've got any ability at all, and if I've got any notion of taking any kind of a risk, I'm going to get gone. I got to see where I fit, or I'm going to get gone. And that's best case scenario. Worst case scenario is I don't see where I fit, but I'm afraid to move. I'm afraid to leave. And so I'm going to sit here and I'm going to bring down everybody I can. Not because that's my goal or objective. It's just because I'm going to come every day frustrated, and I'm going to express that frustration. I'm going to tell people I don't understand what's going on. I'm going to tell people I don't agree with this or I don't agree with that. That's what you get when you got employees. And you can't get this purpose sold across the board. And managers and leaders are pathetic at it a lot of times. You know, they, especially mid-managers, because mid-managers, you know, they get it from the potentate on high, and they go forth and they just repeat, and they don't think about their own audience, and they don't think about, just like me, it'd be like me taking a private meeting with an owner who says, you know what I want this year? I want you to get me enough money so I can get that house in Vail. Now, I could go to the troops and say, troops, I just came from the mountaintop. Word is, need a house in Vail. Let's do it. Let's go make it happen. And there's so many middle managers, that's what they do. Just because the boss is on high word it some way doesn't mean that you got to go to your troops and word it the same way. And it's a mistake. It's a mistake that mid-managers make all the time. Okay, here's what the bosses say to do. And now you got this whole we versus them. That doesn't work. Now you've robbed everybody in the organization from seeing where they fit. And now nobody feels like they fit. And basically you've said to them, you don't even see where you fit. Well, we're going to follow you through the fire. So we have to think about these things. Well, okay, you don't have that concern when you're a solopreneur. But man, it's so much tougher. It's almost easier to think in terms of crafting a really engaging, compelling, truthful, authentic. I'm not talking about manipulation. I'm not talking about deceit. I'm not talking about lying. I'm talking about acting with 100% full integrity. But when it's just you, why am I going to get up tomorrow? And as noble an idea as it is to get up tomorrow to support yourself and your family, it's not enough. Doesn't that sound awful? But you know it's true. It's not enough. There's got to be something even bigger. Something even bigger, something that can make you feel that you're contributing. Again, you got to think about the puzzle. Where do I fit? Well, I fit because I'm a paycheck to this house. Oh, well, you know, there you go. You can ride off into the sunset feeling good about that, can't you? I mean, now you just kind of feel like a hired gun. No, it's got to be something. Got to be something more than that. And you know what we all want. You know what we all want. You want to make a difference. How can you make a difference? I'm not going to leave you with a bunch of answers, but I am going to leave you with a bunch of questions. Because I don't plan on this being the last time I talk about this, so I'm not trying to be the end-all be-all with this conversation. But when it comes to purpose and it comes to plan, let's table plan for the moment and let's focus on this purpose. How can you make a difference? And I'm going to quantify it even more by saying, how can I make a positive difference? How can I make a positive difference for the people that I love and that I care about, my family? How can I make a positive difference for the people that are leaning on me, relying on me? How can I make a positive difference for other people? And I'm going to tell you, if life has taught me anything, it's taught me this. Well, and the Bible has absolutely taught me this. My convictions have taught me this. When I'm sitting across from an owner who says he wants a house in Vail, and now I've got to think about the employees who can help make that happen, and I can think about the customers who are necessary to make that happen, and I'm not even beginning to think about me until, and in all honesty, I say I'm for, well, I'm lumping my family in with that as well. Owner's got to get what he needs. Employees got to get what they need. Customers absolutely got to get what they need. And me and my family come forth. But here's the rub. They're all tied together. They're all tied together. So how can I make a positive difference for me and for my family? Well, my whole career until 2009 was I had to think about these other three groups of people. And that's a lot of people to think about. And I had to think about some engaging, compelling purpose for them before I could even enter the equation. And yeah, you know it's true. Norman Vincent Peale made a career of telling people, get what you want by helping as many other people get what they want. And it's positively true. That doesn't speak to the specifics of your purpose. And I can't necessarily answer purpose. Well, I can't answer purpose for you. Shoot, I'm having a hard enough time answering purpose for myself. But I do know this. I have enough wisdom and experience to know this. It is about answering the question, how can I make a positive difference? How can I determine where in this puzzle piece of life that I fit? And I don't believe that it's this exclusive kind of a thing that there's only one answer. And I've run into people before who, you know, they've got this conviction that for every person, there is the right person. I don't believe that. I love my wife. I think she loves me too. But I'm glad we found each other. But I'm not naive enough to believe that had I never found her, I would have never found anybody, or I would have never found anybody. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I just don't buy that. I mean, that puts, you talk about a burden, talk about a tremendous pressure of the billions of people. So you got to go find the right one. Otherwise you miss out. No, I don't believe that. And I don't believe that there's one piece of the puzzle here or one particular way that the puzzle piece fits. I think that you can fit in a number of ways. I think it's trying to figure out where you fit. And I think as a solopreneur, that may be where the tough work comes in, when it's this whole notion of purpose is, where do I fit? And there are so many other auxiliary questions with that, and I'll just leave you with these. Not only where do I fit, but how do I fit? And how do I want to fit? And where do I want to fit? What do I want to do? How do I want to help other people? If helping other people is how I get what I want, who do I want to help? Who do I want to be around? And as I've said before, if you've listened to any of the previous podcasts, for me, so many of these questions, I tend to turn them on the negative. Who do I not want to help? I don't want to help everybody. I'm sorry. I'm talking about professionally. I just don't. I mean, there are some people I don't want to help. I don't want to help scoundrels. I don't want to help somebody grow their business who's got no scruples, no morals. I don't. There are some businesses I don't care anything about. I don't know anything about. I really don't want to know anything about. Well, you're in the same boat. So it's not only who do you want to serve, who do you not want to serve? Who do you want to be around? Who do you want to avoid? Are there certain types of people that you really just don't want to be around? Those are all the questions you got to wrestle with when it comes to the sense of purpose, to see in this big jigsaw puzzle of life, where do I fit? Where do I want to fit? There's a lot of slots there. There's a lot of empty slots. And here's the good news. Let's end on a high note. The good news is, you can likely fit where you want to fit. You can likely fit where you'd best want to fit. But I think we get so caught up and we're so desperate to get it right. And I understand. I'm right there with you. But here's what I believe it's like. And I had this epiphany while working out today. Don't ask me why I thought about this, but the image of a guy on a big ski jump entered my mind. And if you've watched these guys, I'm going to go and I'm going to look at YouTube. I'm going to find some video of this, and I'll do something with it at the website. The guy comes out and they're not quite straight. And my recollection of watching Wide World of Sports on Saturdays through the winter, because I was always mesmerized by these guys, and they come out and they get their skis, and of course today they sit on those ramps, you know, they sit and their skis are pretty straight. Well, they used to not do that. They used to kind of hop out there, and then they would make one little hop to get their skis straight. I don't know why I started thinking about that one little hop, and I started thinking, you know, if they, without that one little hop, it would have been disaster. It just would have been absolute disaster. But they got out, they got the ski tips in front of them, and they'd make that one little hop, which to me was representative of this one little adjustment, this one seemingly small adjustment, but it changes everything. And I think when it comes to you getting, wrestling down your sense of purpose, ski tips in front of you, one little adjustment. Can you make the one little adjustment that changes everything? And if you can, what would that be? My name is Randy Cantrell. The website is Bula, BULANetwork.com. Next time, I will hopefully come to you from the L studio.